I'm Steve Stein, and you're listening to Inside Asia. Returning to the program this episode is Julian DeSalbury, founder and CEO of Galen Growth Asia. He and his partners at Galen Growth identify and catalyze connections between investors and health tech entrepreneurs. We last spoke some 6 months ago when he gave us the rundown on the general state of healthcare in Asia and some of the groundbreaking projects underway to perhaps one day change the face of healthcare services as we know it. We kicked off our conversation this time with an update. What's the state of healthcare growth and innovation in Asia? How's the ground shifting and players adjusting?
It's been an exciting year for us in 2018. We've seen a major shift in the whole ecosystem, which means that a lot of the things that we have been building have become very much important to the various stakeholder groups. The last 6 months have seen the exciting ride that I described in the last time we spoke get even faster. And so we're just literally computing numbers now, but I can certainly say that the year-to-date position for funding in health tech across the region as a whole, that's Asia-Pacific, has already blown past last year as a whole year. And in July, when we published our half-year report, we talked about a $5 billion investment year. We believe we'll go beyond that, and we'll probably get closer to $6 billion by the end of this year.
That's in terms of investments made to date.
That's pure dollars that have been invested by venture capitalists and other types of investor into healthcare or health tech, ventures. Yes, correct.
I mean, do you see a trend now as a result of this rise and the fact that it is the second largest region in the world in health tech, that more and more investors are coming in with funds specifically targeting health tech?
So we're certainly seeing more dedicated health tech type funds arriving. It varies from market to market, of course, but still the lion's share are from what I call crossover funds. In other words, those that are multidisciplinary.
Yeah. It's a technical space. I mean, it's very complex and convoluted. I mean, healthcare from hospitals, caregiving, privacy. I mean, you run right down through the list. For an investor, it can look a little bit like a quagmire. Why is there so much interest? What's driving this interest in investing in health tech?
So you're right, the sophistication is certainly growing as well. So whereas the early days of the investment landscape, when we looked at it, saw a lot of money going into more sort of B2C type value to the market. So, you know, book a doctor, those kind of things, which are much more sort of retail type offerings, a little bit of healthcare on it. Now we're seeing a much more sophisticated set of startups coming through, which are across the entire value chain. So, for example, we're seeing a lot of AI and genomics within the research space. So, yes, that means the complexity of the startup is much higher, and therefore the complexity of investment in these ventures is getting higher. So the need for more experts, et cetera, and more savvy type investors in this space is certainly growing. So we're seeing that. In terms of the type of investment profile, we're seeing a growing appetite from what I call the growth stage type investors. So those that aren't prepared to take the very early stage risk, but are certainly providing the funding to really enable the venture concern to scale up fast. So that's the trend we've seen over the last year or so in terms of investment in health tech.
How do you define early stage? I mean, what's the threshold? Like a round A in the health tech space would be what? How many millions of dollars?
That varies from market to market in terms of the average size of it. But let's say that roughly speaking, you're talking about $10 million as a good, healthy Series A in Asia Pacific. Yeah.
And then geographically, Julian, where are we seeing most of the activity? Is it Southeast Asia, India, China, elsewhere?
So China represents a lion's share of dollars that have been invested in health tech, without doubt. It's a significant chunk of it. In terms of volumes of deal, we're starting to see a real resurgence uptick in India. And then I would suggest if you break it down into specific markets beyond that, Japan is an interesting ecosystem. Indonesia is growing in stature as well. And so Southeast Asia is starting to manifest its presence a lot more in the last 6 months than in the previous 6 months.
Let's talk about China a little bit and some of the healthcare space dynamics in China and why there must be so much activity up there. Could you just give us our listeners a little rundown on what the healthcare environment looks like in China today? in 2 seconds.
Very difficult in two seconds, yeah. But it is an incredibly complex as well as an incredibly fluid environment. None more less than because the government and its policies have been very, very clear the last year. So Xi Jinping has launched the Health of China 2030, which is his policy for healthcare for the nation, which builds on the 2020 strategy, which is much more around less just focusing on chronic disease, but moving into access to healthcare for all. But in parallel with that, they've also released in April this year the guidelines for digital health, or what they're calling Internet Plus medical health. And so there is an invitation from the private side to play a much more significant role in terms of leveraging technology to bring better healthcare or better delivery of healthcare in China.
Why are they doing that in China and why now?
I think because the resources available in the current infrastructure are not adequate enough to enable healthcare. And so you hear plenty of horror stories in terms of, you know, a doctor typically in China is seeing 70 patients a day. That sort of number is about 70 a week in you know, mature markets like the UK and the USA. So it gives you an idea of just the sheer burden and on the infrastructure as it stands at the moment.
And is that indicative of a doctor shortage or healthcare issues that are escalating, or the fact that hospitals are the center of care?
All of the above. It's each one of those is driving that burden higher and higher. Absolutely.
So the government's view is, knowing this and knowing it won't be quickly or easily corrected, digital healthcare is the most logical way. In other words, technology somehow might get us out of this bind.
Yes, because I think it means you can reach a broader set of nation. You can bring the price down of a particular intervention, and you can start really leveraging your limited resources in a more efficient way across the nation. And there are swathes of China that just don't have that type of access to healthcare. So what we hear about generally is what's occurring within the large cities. But by the time you step out of a Beijing or a Shanghai, you're looking at a very different landscape.
Okay. So that all sounds great, right? But practically, you know, what's the low-hanging fruit in digital healthcare in China? What's an application or a service that you see emerging that helps explain or describe how they can bridge the gaps that exist in the China market, healthcare market today?
So at a micro level, you know, the patient level, it's really being able to get access to care, get access to a doctor, and getting advice, as well as you know, being able to fill a script that's been given you by a doctor. At a healthcare professional level, it's around trying to provide better care to a broader set of people. If you look at China, for example, you know, applications such as Weibo or the Chinese Twitter, for example, WeChat, which is, I guess, the Chinese version of WhatsApp, you know, doctors are heavy, heavy users of those two platforms in order to be able to administer care and be, you know, that advisor to their patients, for example.
So what you're saying is that they're using just existing technologies, low-cost communication technologies, to create, if you will, healthcare groups or advisory capabilities so that people will not have to travel in to hospitals, but they might be able to give remote medical advice based on the transition or transmission of information across a WeChat platform.
Yes, because that is the most convenient way of consuming that information. Now, it's information as opposed to diagnosis, but it's a start. If your patient is already diagnosed and you are maintaining that patient through their chronic disease, then it's an efficient and effective way of being able to communicate and exchange information with that patient.
So that's just leveraging, you know, very advanced communication capabilities in China, where there's clearly is a propensity to use them more so than there might be in the US or Europe. But what about the next level? What about when it comes to remote monitoring of issues, people with diabetes or other type of life-threatening diseases who live in remote areas? Is this something, because it sounds great, right? You know, you listen to these things, but then I'm not clear as to the degree to which those types of capabilities are actually being deployed. What's your impression?
So the government wants to see a lot more of that. And if you look at the guidelines issued in April, you'll see they clearly want much better capability and infrastructure to achieve this. I would suggest that there are some very promising new businesses coming through that are leveraging technology to provide that kind of value proposition. But we're still very much at proof of concept in terms of the scale. And so, you know, proving that you are able to deliver that better healthcare. But it's very interesting to see that it's getting traction, it's growing in stature, it's attracting funding. You know, you get some big names that are providing some of the services, such as Ping An Good Doctor, which is the more One of the better known digital health platforms in China is recently listed in Hong Kong. So everybody knows it for that reason. And that's generating valuable data to be able to start being much more efficient in terms of the way the government's planning the allocation of resources, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, one of the interesting push that we're seeing in China, for example, is the need to try and aggregate some of this data in order to drive better insights in that data and therefore better usage of the existing resources or a better allocation of funding to build resources.
I'm Steve Stein, and my guest this episode is healthcare change catalyst Julien de Salaberry, founder and CEO of Galen Growth Asia. When we come back after the break, Julien updates us on a contest he and his colleagues are running to spur healthcare innovation in the region. This is Inside Asia, and you're listening to my conversation with healthcare industry investor Julien de Salaberry, founder and CEO of Galen Growth Asia. In the second half of our conversation, I switched gears and asked Julien about the work he and Galen Growth are doing to spur or at least encourage innovation in the digital healthcare space. Galen Growth has come up with a format for identifying burgeoning healthcare startups across Asia and then awarding innovators. They kicked things off last year and are now coming up on the announcement of the 2018 winner. I ask him how do they arrive at the finalists and what's the basis for comparing them?
Yeah, we've had fun with that. And last year, you're right, was our first year, which turned out to be a very exciting outcome. And then the winner of last year was Bioformi, which is a Singapore digital health platform. That has gone on since to raise a Series A, and I know is working very closely with a number of large organizations and is very close to the FDA at the moment in terms of the work they're doing and the evolution of their platform. So,
what do they do?
Well, they are looking at they have a platform, an AI platform that looks at a number of data points to try and manage patients in a better way. And so some of the work they're doing with Big Pharma, for example, is exactly in that space in terms of how do you essentially look at real-world evidence in a patient-level context to actually try and influence some of the way in which you apply a certain medication, et cetera. Okay. But, I mean, it's only one particular value proposition that Bioformi is offering. So what do we do at Galen? During the course of the last couple of years of our existence, we have built a database of the health tech startups across the region. And so we've captured a good significant chunk of that, the overall ecosystem.
What are we talking about? What's the size of that ecosystem?
So the ecosystem, we think, our best guess is somewhere between 4,000 and 4,500 health tech startups. Across the region, yeah. And we've captured a good 50% of that. For every startup, we've captured about 80 or 90 distinct startup points, ranging from funding to who's running this organization, to what products they have, to what value proposition they offer to the market, what technology they're using to actually achieve this. And so all of that allows us to be able to look at really a 3D view of that startup. We overlay on there a set of analytics. So we've developed some proprietary algorithms that allow us to start assessing that startup from a funding perspective, from a maturity perspective, et cetera. Momentum in the market, what value they bring into the patient, et cetera.
But for the sake of the contest, you identify an initial 64, is that correct?
Yeah. So that data says to us, listen, from there, we can actually assess, you know, which are the most promising startups. And so for the tournament, we apply three filters. One is that maturity I was just talking about, which is our calculation of what we believe the maturity of that startup is.
Are they past the this is a good idea stage?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Yeah. We're looking at a sweet spot in the middle. That is, if you look at the bell curve, that isn't the early stage that has just arrived with two slides and a great idea. And neither is it the guy that's iPod and therefore is, you know, quite obviously no longer a startup.
Would they need to be post-revenue or they can still be pre-revenue?
Don't worry about the revenue at this stage. That's not something. It's nice, but it's not something. We're really looking for the fact that they have a prototype market and they're actually delivering value to the patient, for example, or to the healthcare professional, depending on what their value proposition is. And so that's one assessment. The other one, of course, we want to make sure that the region is fairly represented. So we do look at it by market. And the third one was really looking in terms of the value proposition to the market. So it could be, are they working in research or are they about compliance? In other words, a chronic disease management for a patient. And really all of that is to make sure that we're looking at a very sensible, balanced view of what health tech is bringing to healthcare. And from there, we narrow it down to what we believe to be the 64 most competitive in the space by merit of what I described. This year, we took a slightly different approach to last year. We decided to select 59 of them and allow the ecosystem to nominate five of them. So we gave five wildcards to the ecosystem.
Who's the ecosystem?
So the ecosystem is all of the people that we have daily interaction with or almost daily interaction with, either through social media or through our curated distribution list of decision makers in the health tech space. And it's always very pleasant to have that type of reach out, I guess, to the ecosystem, because the response is usually very energetic, and certainly everyone's very passionate about the startup they think should be there. And it's interesting to see how the investment community suddenly wakes up and tries to push, to some extent, their own investee. Yeah. But it's good to see that kind of excitement.
But they still have to play by the same rules. In other words, nominate those that meet your basic criteria.
Yeah, so the wildcards are a little more loosely included.
But my favorite. This is my favorite.
Correct, indeed. Okay. And so having done that piece of work, we then hand the whole competition, so the 64, over to the ecosystem as a whole to vote. The ecosystem can either vote because it's a subjective decision, which tends to be the way it goes. But there is also a very good way of doing it very objectively. If you look at the way we set up the voting system, every one of those ventures is hyperlinked back to our database. So you can actually click on the hyperlink and go and have a look at the startup on our database and actually make as objective a decision as you wish. By looking at each one of those startups individually.
Right. So you can do your own analysis.
Yeah,
you can actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the aim of the game is actually that. You should actually take a closer interest. Yeah. And so we've seen and we've spoken to some investors who've actually done that. They've actually looked at every single one of those startups on a case-by-case basis before making a decision as to which one they wanted to vote for.
It still sounds a little bit like the healthcare equivalent of the Oscars to me.
Well,
he is my favorite actor. De Niro should get it because he's De Niro, in other words.
Right? Yeah, but it's also interesting to see how the startups themselves are taking this very seriously and are mobilizing their entire own network to actually get to vote for them.
So it does sound, Julian, like this is really, as much as anything, a method to raise enthusiasm and interest and curiosity about what's out there in the health tech space.
Absolutely. I mean, it is very much around raising profile of the ecosystem, raising profile of what we believe to be some of the more promising solutions out there and their teams, and really trying to engage all the players in the space to sort of communicate and engage and whatever. The ulterior motive for us is, of course, promoting, I guess, not only Galen Growth Agent, but also our summit, which we run every year in mid-November. And that's where we award the most innovative health tech startup award to the winner.
You know, I have to ask, because this is technology after all. In some ways in the health tech space, is hype really a factor we have to take into consideration? I mean, artificial intelligence is getting all this play, blockchain, and they're all fascinating, technological capabilities out there. And there are some interesting possibilities, but it still seems like the curve is way out there. How is it with health tech? What's the reality check on this?
So, yes, I mean, there is hype. I mean, there's a lot of hype around some keywords that we know well, AI, blockchain, et cetera. So, what you're describing is not too too different to other verticals, be it fintech or other things such as e-commerce, etc. I mean, it's down to the individual, really. I mean, you will get those who get absolutely hung up on AI and blockchain. We at Galen Growth Asia don't believe that's the right way to look at health tech as a solution to improving healthcare or transforming healthcare in the region. And so we always turn the conversation the other way around in terms of what is solution are we enabling through that technology. So for us, an AI or a blockchain are clearly an enabler, which is a very exciting evolution in the way in which we are bringing solutions to the market. But at the end of the day, it's what you're doing with that technology. And this is why we spend a lot of time on the team, what solution to bring into the market, but also what business model they're putting in play to actually be able to reach the patient, for example, but also doing in a commercially sustainable way.
Let me ask you that, because, you know, so much emphasis by investors are typically put on the technology, the solution. But how essential, particularly in this very exclusive space, which is oftentimes requires a lot of technical understanding, knowledge of the healthcare ecosystem and everything else, how essential are the leadership teams? And I don't mean just say, oh, yeah, they're very essential. I mean, really, relative to the solution, the funding and everything else, how important is it to have the right leadership and team in place in order to get the funding required?
It's fundamental, absolutely fundamental. And you will know as well as I do that having the best idea in the game is not necessarily means you're going to be a winner. It really is down to a little bit of luck, but a hell of a lot of hard work, perseverance, and some really smart thinking. And really surrounding yourself as a team with the right experts to achieve this.
You know, in some ways, you look at, you mentioned before, the B2C health tech applications got a lot of play several years ago, particularly in China and elsewhere, where they had those economies of scale. But now increasingly, you're seeing things go B2B or into the research side, big and small molecule research capabilities. It gets very down into the minutiae of this. How do you, with such a spread, you know, figure out where to lay your bets and what ultimately is going to pay the dividends?
It's an excellent question. And you're right, you see the evolution. And essentially, you come to the same conclusion, which is monetizing B2C. It's very hard in this region. And therefore, you do need some form of B2B2C model to try and achieve that. Your point is, in terms of how do you see the wood for the trees to some extent, is massively important. And it has been one of the major drivers for the creation of Gale & Growth Asia and for one of the building blocks that we have put together, which is our analytics platform, which we call Health Tech Alpha. And its whole purpose is to create transparency and visibility of what's happening in the space so that we're making better informed decisions. Because what I want to see is more corporates, more providers and more investors come into play in this space. And by play, I mean taking a firm position within the space and therefore backing an entrepreneur and their great idea by either putting funding in there or by allowing them to scale by leveraging the structure of that big pharma company or of that telco, et cetera. And so that's a large part of what we're trying to fulfill as Gale & Growth Asia.
So the data tries to break this down to create as best as possible an apples to apples comparison. So investors who may not have the health specific capability could understand and analyze and determine the risk associated with an investment.
Yes, by either looking at that particular asset, let's say, or that particular potential investee, it's much more in a 3D view because you're looking at the various pieces that are actually important to make a health tech startup venture successful, but also looking at within its own ecosystem. And so we do work with investors, for example, both global investors as well as more regional investors that say to us, listen, we were looking at this market and we're looking at this type of capability. You know, help us understand what that landscape looks like and how they compare to each other. And that's the power of what we do is be able to bring that data and be able to look at those comparisons and be able to answer the questions and allow an investor to say, hey, listen, I want to narrow it down to these two or three because now I understand, apples and pears to your point.
Julian, as always, fascinating, great space, really interesting work you're doing. We're going to keep checking back and we also want to find out who's going to win.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Look forward to reconnecting.
I'm Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia. You've been listening to my conversation with Asia healthcare sector champion and early-stage health tech advisor, Julian DeSalberry, founder and CEO of Gale & Growth Asia. At the end of each episode, I like to leave my listeners with the last thought. It's our Asia Insider Minute, where I do my best to outline some of the key takeaways to the conversation you've just heard. A key point: people matter, maybe more than the health tech innovations themselves. I know that may sound strange in some regards. After all, we don't often hear it said that people are the catalyst for disruption. Technology is oftentimes given that credit or the blame, as the case may be. Yet it's the people that drive the business, scale an organization, and deliver new insights to unleash technology on the biggest problems. Sit investors down and have a deep dive conversation about why they favor one startup over another, and you witness a subtle shift into a discussion on the entrepreneurs themselves. Don't get me wrong, the core technology has to be right, and it must be geared to make a breakaway difference. But without skilled and thoughtful leaders behind it, technology remains rudderless and in some cases can even become a downright distraction. In the nuanced and somewhat exclusive field of healthcare, where science, regulation, and in-depth knowledge of medical protocols are essential, it makes the people factor all the more important. Add to this the variances that exist market by market, and the complexities of taking a company regional or even global become all the more daunting. Charismatic leadership is always a plus, but deep and highly specialized knowledge and the ability to communicate this in a myriad of ways is essential if the business has any chance of lifting off. Another takeaway from a discussion with Julian is the potential opportunity posed by China, but not because of the country's vast market size or relative sector immaturity. No, there's something more at work, and it goes by the name of government. The Chinese government is hell-bent on supporting any and all initiatives that hold promise of improving the quality and cost of healthcare in a nation of 1.4 billion people. The Chinese have watched the escalation of healthcare costs across the Pacific and shudder at the idea of U.S.-style healthcare price hikes that could bankrupt the government. At least for now, the Chinese government, and not the private sector, serves as the primary provider of healthcare for most of its citizens. This is a subject we've touched on from various directions in previous episodes. Many of our other guests have pointed to the foot race in China to innovate in anticipation of shifting domestic healthcare demands. China's population is both aging and subjugated to a spate of hazardous environmental conditions that threaten to test the limits of China's healthcare system unless something is done about it. In other words, the industrial diseases that have plagued the West for decades are now hitting China full force. There's little doubt that a large part of the Chinese hunger for health tech innovation is to stave off a pending wave of severe health problems that, if not checked, could induce social or political unrest. The market is primed, capital is plenty, and government support is all but assured. All that's needed now is a phalanx of new health tech ventures with solutions designed for the challenge. As was pointed out in an earlier episode with former hospital CEO Mac Banner, the thing that has threatened to hold back health tech advances in the West won't necessarily be a problem for China, and here I'm talking about data privacy. Don't misunderstand me. The US and Europe are awash in data. They've been plying high-tech solutions and gathering insights for decades. The problem is in accessing and managing that data in a way that doesn't infringe on an individual's right to privacy or expose the relative cost of caring for a patient at any cost. That's sensitive stuff. Mind you, no one is decrying the need to safeguard sensitive health data, but in a market where individual rights are subsumed by what's best for the common good, a lot more innovation and remote healthcare management will likely be deployed in a place like China, which by default opens the floodgates of opportunity for health tech innovations and entrepreneurs. What does this mean for the world of health tech investing? Will it become the case that the biggest breakthroughs come not in markets with the best technology, but with the most open and receptive market conditions? What's the tipping point for data privacy in the realm of healthcare? If it were left to the consumer in any market, would assurances of lower ongoing medical costs be incentive enough for people to surrender data privacy? It's a choice that most will never be able to make. If healthcare in Asia is a subject you'd like to learn more about, visit us at www.insideasiapodcast.com. Browse our 67 episodes and stream or download my discussions with healthcare experts Mac Banner, Clancy Houston, Rosalind Chow Koo, and others. And as always, thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Steve Stein saying, coming from the outside on Inside Asia.